The Prestige Jayco pre-game interview.
Three-time premiership winner with the Lions, and the Sir Doug Nicholls round of football now just continues to grow and evolve. Seen some wonderful Indigenous strips out there as well. And Chris Johnson joins us on the line. Chris, welcome to K-Rock Football. Ian Cohen, Darren Berry, Kent Kingsley, and also Darren Parkin with you. Thanks for spending a little bit of time with us. And you're actually involved also at some of the junior levels as far as Indigenous football goes.
Yeah, spot on, guys. First, thank you for giving me the time to come on today. Yeah, just out here at Windy Hill at the moment, we've got our diversity, so team or squad versus the Vic Country 16s at the moment. So our diversity squad's made up of Indigenous and kids that have parents born from a non-English speaking background. So out here at the moment, and yeah, you're pretty much on the money there. Some of the jumpers last night we've seen look fantastic, and you know, we're going to see a couple more over the next couple of days as well. And it's a fantastic time to celebrate our people, celebrate our culture, and as well at the same time, just looking on the theme of it all is trying to stamp out racism. And then, obviously, in the coming weeks, we've got Reconciliation Week. So a lot of it all getting together, and we'll have a lot of great discussions and, you know, talk about things that probably get swept under the table from time to time.
A very different world, Chris, to when it was when you were drafted seventh to Fitzroy in 1993. There wasn't necessarily a lot of the Indigenous leaders in the same positions that they are, or the players respected maybe the same way that they are now. What was it like for you in 1993? Was it school of hard knocks, or did you have some people you could go to, talk to? Who helped develop you as a footballer?
Look, you go back to your junior levels, obviously, and you go back to your father. Dad was absolutely superb in terms of, you know, dealing with, you know, the little bits and pieces that happened within the other side of the white line. And, you know, quite often I would get racially taunted, and Dad really kept me straight and narrow, and just sort of said, keep playing your game that you're playing, because they're only trying to do it for one reason. They're trying to get you off your game. And, you know, I'd have to put that down to Dad to be able to sort of calm my anger down. And you know, there were I was lucky enough not to encounter it on the AFL field because of the likes of the Nicky Winmars and the Michael Longs and the Michael McLeans. And you know, there's a lot of guys that really stood up for what we did, for what they did and what they believed in, and stamped it out. And we're still trying to stamp it out now, but certainly with my development, it'd have to you know, Dad was probably the one that sort of helped me along all the way through, and obviously coming through the TAC Cup system at the same time.
Just on that, obviously you spoke about the Fitzroy thing, just sort of creating a tangent there. I imagine for a young player, given what Fitzroy would go through over those next few years after you were drafted, would have been really difficult. You obviously then go on to Brisbane and experience all of that success. Sort of how much, I guess, more special was that, given how difficult a journey you saw for the old Fitzroy people in those first few years?
Yeah, look, it was quite challenging. You know, it was quite, you know, it was what would happen a lot when I was turning up and training at Fitzroy is that, you know, there was speculation in newspapers and on the TV that we had no money left and we would have to merge. And this happened regularly on a pre-season basis. And almost every session there'd be almost a line of media taking photos and, you know, trying to get players' comments about not having a team coming in the AFL. So it was quite, it wasn't as easy. It wasn't as what I pictured AFL to be like, you know, going to a club that looks like it's going to be done. And it was only a 3-year stint I had at Fitzroy. And those years were fantastic. Really enjoyed it. Had a number of coaches through the time there, Robert Shaw, Bernie Quinlan and Mick Noonan. So I had a new coach almost every year there. And Al McConnell came in as a takeover for all those guys when they stood down. So it was quite challenging, and we just pushed through. And lucky enough, there was some light at the end of the tunnel for me being selected part of the eight that went up to Brisbane.
Chris, it's Darren Berry. Thanks so much for joining us on K-Rock on this very special round for, as you say, culturally for the Indigenous people. Where do you think we've got to, Chris, at this point in time now? You've just spoken a little bit about your early days and the influence your father had, controlling what is just totally unacceptable. We are still getting educated daily, weekly on this. I'm sitting here at Marvel and we've got the Indigenous flag out in the centre circle. It's a complex question. Where do you think we are at right now, Chris, as to where it was when you started?
Oh, we're much better. We're much better. We're much advanced. You know, the amount of education that the AFL have been doing. You know, the AFL are leaders within any codes across the country in trying to stamp this out. Look, what we do know and what we do appreciate is the work that he's done out in the communities as well. And we try to make our role models that play out there on a week-to-week basis to be those role models. Having said that, there's still work to be done as well. I think when it doesn't hit the headlines or it doesn't get brought up quite often, people think it's not there. It's still there. So I think getting the right people in the right positions to be able to talk about it and basically have conversations about it. And it's a small minority that need to be you know, brought up to speed where it's unacceptable, just not unacceptable as an Indigenous person, but as a non-Indigenous person as well, calling people out on it and not accepting it within their own community and then their own environment. I think that's where we need to get to. And, you know, I'm not 100% sure whether that does happen to this day. But again, it's about starting conversations, talking about little things. And, you know, there would be a number of people that probably listening to your radio station that I come in contact with that probably never had any contact with an Indigenous person and don't understand when you be called a certain person or a certain thing, that it cuts deep, it cuts straight to the heart because, you know, that certain person doesn't know where I've come from, doesn't know where my family's come from, doesn't know my history. So it really cuts deep when someone is to say a word like that. But look, we here at the AFL and AFL Victoria, we're really trying hard. You know, next week we'll have the game between Vic Country and Vic Metro at the MCG, and they'll be wearing Indigenous jumpers, and you know, we'll have a welcome to country, and all the squads, both squads of Vic Country and Vic Metro, will go through cultural awareness sessions as well. So we're trying to do what we can do at the development level as well, as trying to get it before these boys and girls become adults. So it's always just an education piece to it. We can't think that, you know, we do all this education one year and then we don't have to do it the next year.
Yep.
It's an ongoing thing that we need to keep addressing at various times.
Chris, I love the passion in your voice, and I'm sure our listeners are very much taking this message on board. I'll just throw you one more and then I'll hand you over to Kent. When I say the name Kevin Sheedy, what does that mean to you?
Look, Kevin Sheedy has been a fantastic advocate for Indigenous people. He has walked, you know, many a different sort of avenues within his own career, but he's been the pioneer in understanding and bringing our culture into the game. Look, he has been able to, you know, really become the pioneer in that area. And he just, you know, he's just a marvel in what he's been able to do and what he's been able to create. How he's been able to create this round, you know, he's been fantastic. And it all comes back to, yes, it's the Richmond and Essendon game, and that used to, what all it used to be when I was playing back in the day, and used to sit back and be quite envious of it. Now, every team, every club is doing an Indigenous jumper and doing it proud as well. And, you know, they have local artists that do it. And he's been able to generate this. And he's been able to generate this time for reconciliation and talk about certain things and give people the opportunities to actually come out and play, you know, AFL football. You know, like if he had a number of players at Essendon Football Club, and, you know, obviously the obvious ones are, you know, Longy and Wangers and, you know, Kickett. Dean Rioli and Derry Kickett. But a lot of others have come through that as well. And they probably haven't gone on to be fantastic AFL players and been life members or of their football club. But what he's been able to do, he's been able to bring them through the football club. And they've been able to go back to, you know, their communities and be able to be the leaders within their communities as well. And that's where I admire Sheeds about that.
The voice you're listening to is Chris Johnson, three-time premiership player with the Brisbane Lions as well. Thanks to Prestige Jayco, our pre-match interview, Australia's number one motorhome dealer, Bellarine Highway in Newcombe. Chris, here's Kent Kingsley.
Chris, our game, the history of our game is so many wonderful Indigenous players and yourself, you know, two times All-Australian and Indigenous Team of the Century. I'm curious to see who you rate as some of the best Indigenous players to play, either at AFL level or didn't get the opportunity to. Who rates the highest for you?
Yeah, thanks, Ken. It's hard, isn't it? It's you know, there's so many players out there that have played, and you know, when I was playing, it was low. It was only about sort of around that sort of 3 to 5% when I was playing. Now it's up to 11%. So at the moment, you love watching the guys of Eddie Betts and all those Andrew McLeod and stuff. But the guys that I admired from afar when I was playing was Darryl White. And fortunate enough, I went to go and play with him as well. And he became, he still is a very good mate. And we're actually catching up later today together as well for some work doing the curtain raise at the MCG together as well. So he was one guy that I sort of looked from afar and admired and loved to be like him. And I certainly couldn't mark like him or kick his freaky skulls, but certainly I admired the way he went about it on the football field and then off the football field. And the other one there was certainly Michael McLean. I've seen these guys behind the scenes, what they'll be able to do. And look, they're not your household names that you'd sort of resonate with, but I was able to see what they'll be able to do at a professional level and go from there. And I just loved watching Andrew McLeod. I had a couple of times playing on him, and him and I captained Australia together, and I just admired him. I had the front row seat where I played on him a couple of times in the forward pocket, and he gave me a couple of bars from time to time. But certainly those three players, and funny enough, they're all NC boys as well. So they're the top three for me that I really enjoyed watching while I was playing my AFL career and sitting back and watching as a young fella as well for Darryl White and Michael McLean.
Kozer, as a St Kilda supporter, every time that name Andrew McLeod comes up, I love watching him play, but not on grand final day, Kozer.
Picked up a couple of Norm Smiths, I think, against...
stop it.
Maybe your mob as well. The other one, of course, and you share a bit of history because you both played at Fitzroy. So Doug Nicholls, who went on to be a pastor, went on to obviously be governor, was a knight commander as well, started with the Northcote Football Club, VFA, obviously, third in Fitzroy's best and fairest count. It's a great name, isn't it, Sir Doug Nicholls? A young man that did so much with his life almost before it was expected and really broke the mould early. And there wasn't a lot that came behind him, but now it's starting to regenerate again.
Yeah, you're right. Uncle Doug was a fantastic person to talk for our people and speak up and speak for our rights as well. And he was someone that, you know, we've got a lot of people that want to do stuff and a lot of people that say they want to do stuff. And Uncle Doug was the one that sort of put it all into action and had the people behind him to support him as well. So, he went back to his local community in Cummergunja as well. And, he was just fantastic in that. And to have a round named after and everyone, you know, it's a great way to honour him, every year. And this year we're obviously honouring Michael Long as well for his his great work that he's done with the Long Walk and standing up for racism and standing up. But certainly Sir Doug was the one that started it back in the day. When he was coming through the ranks.
The Long Walk is fascinating. 15 years ago, Michael Long literally drove his car to Kalkello, got out and started walking in sort of jeans and T-shirt. But he was one, Chris, that just said, I'm going to do this, and went and actually did it. Now, obviously, the Long Walk doesn't take place between Melbourne and Canberra anymore. It's a great tradition now where people ascend on the MCG and, you know, Michael Long's leading from the front. But he was one that said, I'm just going to do this.
He certainly was, and he had been standing up for it, you know, well after he played as well. And the one thing I love about Michael now that he's giving opportunity to young kids, and he's still sending that message. And you know, Michael, what he's been able to do is build that Long Walk up to something pretty big, and build up his learning centre up in Darwin pretty big as well. And you know, Michael could quite easily be the guy who sort of just sits away and has his name to it and not get involved, but the person Michael is, he gets himself involved, he gets right in there, he talks to the kids, he gets really, really interactive with them as well. And what a better, there's no other better person to do that, especially within the NT as well.
A couple of things, obviously, as we let you go, because you've got, you have to give us around the grounds. What's happening with the game you're at? Who's winning, who's losing?
Yeah, Vic Country winning quite easily at the moment. I think it's about 5-0. A bit of a wind blowing down to the City End. So it's a bit of a challenge at the moment for the diversity squad. Obviously, this squad, the diversity squad, have only just come together today to a group that's probably, I think, at the moment, Big Country are probably at their peak at the moment. They've probably only got a couple more changes to make within their squad. We've got young Nowie Moore out here, son of Nathan Lovett Murray, playing for the Vic Country boys, not for the diversity squad. So he's one to keep a name out for. He plays within the Bendigo Pioneers in the NAB League.
Okay. Now, I know Chuck wants to talk to you about the Lions. I want to talk to you about what local club, Jacana, that's obviously going through some hard times at the moment, mate. I mean, some famous names have come through there and it looks like they're really backs against the wall.
Yeah, they certainly are. And, you know, last time I played for the club was here at Windy Hill only, 2 years ago in a premiership. So I went back there for 4 years and myself and five other committee members got it to a really good stage of a really good level in terms of sponsorship and player list, and unfortunately a lot of us guys have walked away from the club over the last couple of years and it just hasn't been replaced. And when you come talk about local football, it's so hard to compete if you haven't got sponsorship dollars, and that's where the club's fallen away. We just haven't got the sponsorship dollars to be able to compete within the competition. Some management issues within the inner sanctum there that's sort of been sorted out, and we've had to close our doors this week. We fielded two teams last week, which was great, but this week at Tuesday night training we only had the 13 guys show up, and then on the Thursday night we only had the 10 guys show up. So it's quite difficult, it's quite hard. There's a lot of people down there trying to do as much work as possible, and you know it's not easy trying to do it all on your own, and it's unfortunate. Dad played there. I'd played there, my brother had played there, so I've got quite a family history there as well, so it's quite disappointing. But I believe there are still some talks with the league and the EDFL in trying to get the club back on its feet and ready to go for next year and putting a strategy behind it. And, Jacana is the last team within the 3049 postcode within here in the northern suburbs in Melbourne. And, we've had back in the day when it was, footy was strong in that area in the 80s and 90s, we had six teams in that area. Now we've only got the one team, which is Jacana. And I think everyone within the community will fight their hardest to try and keep it up and going. And hopefully someone can come and give us some support somewhere along the line. Unfortunately, I can't go back there. I live on the other side of town, but I try and support in any which way I possibly can.
That's a great shame, Chris. And we heard Michael Long the other night also speak passionately about St Mary's up there in the Northern Territory, suffering similar difficulties. And it's not just, there's plenty of clubs in the same boat. If we could just divert for a moment, Chris, maybe a last one because we appreciate your time.
No, you're fine.
Thank you. When you left Fitzroy Football Club that Koza spoke about, moved to Brisbane, did you envisage at the time, if you could have stopped the clock and said, hey, I'm going to be a three-time premiership player
with
the Brisbane Lions, two-time All-Australian. I mean, we should also celebrate what a fine career you had. I love watching you play.
Yep.
You need to slip into the back pocket now out there out at Windy Hill. But what a time you had at the Brisbane Lions. Can you just, again, in a moment or two, give us a bit of a snapshot into that unbelievable period?
Yeah, look, there were some fantastic times, and you see all the highlights, and I've finished with a career with three wooden spoons and three premierships, so there's not too many people have probably been on that receiving end, but I was quite happy enough to get the premierships, obviously, but the wooden spoons certainly taught me a lot. But being up there at that stage and that time with the group that we had was outright amazing. It was a couple of simple messages that we had. The list didn't change too much when Lee come across and took over from John Northey. We brought a couple of players in Martin Pike and Mel Michael and a few others here and there, and Blake Carosella to add to that list. And obviously we drafted a couple of boys, young kids, the name of Luke Power and Simon Black, were two handy footballers that came into us they were very, very young. And we had Jason running around, but look, it was just an awesome time to be involved. And we just had a real confidence level that was pretty hard to unbreak. And we knew that if everyone was to do what they needed to do, we would be within the game. And if we played at our best, we'd certainly be able to challenge anyone within the competition. But only a couple of times that we couldn't get across the line on the last day, or once in the last day of September. But the leadership of Lee Matthews and Alistair Lynch and Michael Voss was outstanding. And we just had so many guys across the line that were so good. And, someone that goes unrecognised quite a lot is Craig McRae. His pressure in our forward line was outstanding through that. And, you know, you, then you go back and talk about Marcus Ashcroft, and you talk about, you know, the Scott boys, and you talk about Mel Michael, and you talk about Tim Notting, and, you know, the names just keep going on. And, you know, it was an awesome time. And we thought we had a responsibility, and Lee thought he had a responsibility, that we needed to grow the game within Queensland. And the great thing that we were able to do is give people great access to us within the team. And, look, it was good times. We were up against rugby league, and for us to go, you know, be there on four consecutive times on grand final day and only get the three was just a fantastic life experience. And and I'm sure all my family that enjoyed it as well, in terms of mum and dad driving her around all those early days at football and development squads here and there, and then finally being there on grand final day, they certainly enjoyed it.
Chris, you've spoken with amazing clarity and passion and insight. We are here at Marvel Stadium at the moment. The game for broadcast for us this afternoon is the Bulldogs and North Melbourne. One of your premiership teammates, Brad Scott, has obviously had an interesting month, and that's really culminated in the last 12 hours or so, where the reports are that he and North Melbourne are going to part company. As we let you go, because we've got a break coming up as well, but just give us an insight into Brad Scott, what he's thinking would be, what sort of a man he is, and your thoughts on obviously the impending parting between him and a decade of coaching.
Yeah, look, I think what Brad's been able to do at North Melbourne is been able to, you know, not they haven't been winning on a consistent base, but I think he's been able to bring some really good structure there, and some good sort of confidence within the playing group. You know, it's unfortunate that at various times they're unable to get across the line on the last sort of kick or whatever that was. But certainly Brad, I think as a person, if he feels that he's not making any inroads, he would feel that he's probably not necessary there anymore, and he probably needs to go somewhere else. Look, if he chooses that, I think he can walk away and try and walk away and be quite confident that he done as best as he possibly could. Obviously, they've been trying to land some big fish for a long time within the North Melbourne Football Club, and haven't been able to deliver that for him. You know, they've gotten some outside players, but not really any inside players as well. And we know that they were looking at a number of players coming into this season, you know, and they just struggled. And that's a bit disappointing for Brad, and hopefully he gets another gig somewhere else. But it's a bit disappointing to see another coach being outed like that.
Chris, fantastic, as I said, insights from you. We wish you well in your fledgling, I suppose, AFL and AFL Vic and coaching career, and with some tutelage of some youngsters underneath you as well. And look, good luck with that. Terrific career, your own, and obviously a celebration of the Sir Doug Pastor, or Pastor Sir Doug Nicholls round of football right across Australia.
Good on you guys. Have a good call today.
Thanks, Chris.
Fantastic.
The Prestige Jaco pre-game interview.